It's time for Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.
Well, good morning and welcome to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Over the next couple of weeks, we are focusing on the California governor's race. The primary is coming up on June 2nd, and the top two vote-getters, regardless of party affiliation, will move on to the November general election. Today on the show, we're joined by one of the candidates who has been leading in some of the recent polls, Republican Steve Hilton. He's been a well-known conservative commentator and a political strategist. Steve, thanks so much for coming on today.
Great to be with you. Remember, the election is really now. The ballots are going out now, and the quicker we can vote, get our ballots in, the better we can be prepared to chase up the votes that we need, make sure we get a good result. So don't leave it till June. Vote now.
So how are you feeling right now as we sit and talk, looking ahead to this upcoming election?
Well, I'm feeling good. We are, as you mentioned, leading in every poll other than one that was commissioned by one of the Democrat candidates, Javier Becerra. And the lead seems to be growing. It's been growing all year. Obviously, it's been a very strong boost to the campaign to be endorsed by the president, by President Donald Trump. And so I think it's very, very encouraging that we're leading, but there's also a warning hidden within the structure of the race. And it's something we have to take very seriously because obviously it's, you know, we're desperate for change in California. We cannot have another 4 years of one-party rule, let alone another 8 years of one party rule where the Democrats control everything. I mean, just look at what they've been doing. The absolute disaster that's given us this bloated nanny state bureaucratic government that's crushing the spirit and soul of our state, that is completely undermining everything that is the basis of our success in California. As a result, we have the highest poverty rate in the country, the highest unemployment rate, the highest cost of living by far. U.S. News and World Report ranks us 50th out of 50 states for opportunity. Wallet Hub ranks us 50th out of 50 states for affordability. Chief Executive Magazine, 50th out of 50 for business climate. On and on, highest gas tax, worst roads in the country. Everything that they touch turns to disaster. And so we obviously need change. And especially in rural communities of California, where the assault on everything that matters has just been so aggressive from these Democrats in Sacramento. They just have no feeling for, no love for, appreciation of, it seems to me, the rural parts of our state, as I do, and I've spent a lot of time there. We desperately need change. And so I get back to the race. The warning is that if you look at what's going on in this race, there does seem to be an element of consolidation on the Democrat side. Swalwell's exit with his sleazy scandal has kind of clarified things a little bit, and it looks as if the machine, the Democrat machine, is lining up behind Javier Becerra, who's totally useless, career politician. Nothing would change with him, but that's who they want. They want a puppet like that. So he's getting a lot of support, and at the same time, you've got the billionaire climate fanatic, Tom Steyer, who's got unlimited money. He's already spent $140 million on his campaign, the most expensive campaign anywhere in America. And there's plenty more where that came from. And the reason I mention that is there is a scenario where you could see in the next week or so, I wouldn't be surprised if you suddenly started to see two Democrats in the top two. And the reason that's so serious is, of course, it would mean that we are denied any chance of change in California. And so it's very important that we get behind the leading Republican candidate so that we can guarantee a Republican in the top two and we're not shut out. And the leading candidate on every measure, I'm leading in the polls, leading on fundraising, endorsed by the leader of our party, that's me. So this really is a time to take this seriously and unify as a party.
Before we get into some other issues, for people who don't know your backstory, what is your background and what led you to get into the governor's race?
So my parents are Hungarian. They were refugees from communism. I was born in England, as people you can tell from my accent. I grew up in a very normal working class household in England. My stepfather, who's also Hungarian, He worked construction. I spent my, you know, when I was a kid, I'd go and help out on the construction sites to earn a bit of money. My first job was project manager for a construction company. I then made it to Oxford University, worked for a little bit in politics at the Conservative Party when Margaret Thatcher was Prime Minister, then went to work in business. Most of my career has been in business. I worked for some very large companies, then started businesses of my own, including a couple of restaurants. Went back into politics for a little bit, worked inside of the government in 10 Downing Street, senior advisor to the Prime Minister, David Cameron, many years later, where I was part of the team responsible for implementing our domestic policy reform program. And then in 2012, moved to California with my wife and my two sons, because mainly because of her job. She's at the time working in tech. We moved to the Bay Area. I've always been in love with California, what it represents. I have this something I say often, which is California means to America what America means to the world. California represents the very best of everything that America has to offer. But, of course, it's been going so terribly wrong in recent years. You know, when I moved here, I taught at Stanford University for a bit, started another business, had a very unexpected career hosting a show on Fox News, which many people might have seen, The Next Revolution. But as the years went on, I really wanted to get back into doing things. Most of my career has been in a hands-on executive, as it were. So I decided that I wanted to help think about solutions to our problems in California. I set up a policy organization, Golden Together. That was 3 years ago. I've been traveling the state, listening to Californians, developing concrete solutions. The first one that I worked on was on housing. And there was, funny enough, there was a meeting that I had in the legislature that really made me think, you know what, maybe you should get into this. It was a very depressing meeting with a Democrat lawmaker who basically, in the context of discussing something to do with housing, said, well, the unions run this place, as in Sacramento. And I thought, that's outrageous. You're an elected member of the legislature. What are you talking about? And it was really that moment more than anything that made me think this place is completely broken. It's time for it to be really shaken up, and an outsider like me can do it.
You know, being based here in the Sierra foothills where fire danger is always extra high, what's your plan for addressing wildfire risk?
Well, it's actually the first policy report that we wrote at Golden Together for modern forest management. So I spent a lot of time on the issue. And I've spoken a lot with my friend David Tungipa, who's, you know, represents, I don't know exactly which parts of his district that your area would cover, but I'm sure some of them.
Yeah, pretty much this listening area, he covers most of that area. So, yeah, that's the right person.
Yeah. He's a very, very good friend of mine. And we worked together on this report years ago. And it's common sense. It's common sense. We need to get back. We need to get rid of the extreme environmental regulations that have prevented the management of the fuel load in our forests in a common sense way. And when we do that, we also revive our timber industry, because we have a thriving timber industry, as you know better than most, in California, and particularly in those sorts of areas. Many sawmills, most of them shut down now. And the real crime here is, if you look at the actual numbers, we probably used to take out of the forests, I don't know, I think the number was about 6 billion board feet of timber. Now we're down to about one or so. We're still using it. We're actually using more than we were, but it's being imported. We're trucking it in from Canada and Oregon rather than getting it out of our own forests in a way that can create jobs and opportunity in rural areas. And so that's just insanity. And so what I'm going to do is make sure that, and this is a good example of why it's helpful to have a candidate endorsed by the president, is work with the federal administration. Doug Burgum is someone I know very well, to make sure that we are really implementing at the state level what the president and his team have outlined in a very, very good executive order on forest management last year for the federal level. But it's been blocked by the states, and so, but here in California at the state level. So it's really, the answer is sensible management of the fuel load in our forests in a way that supports commercial logging and timber operations.
Need to take a break. We're talking with Republican candidate for governor Steve Hilton on this weekend's Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. We'll have our second segment coming up in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
Welcome back to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Over the next couple of weeks, we are focusing on the California governor's race, joined on the telephone today by Steve Hilton. He is a Republican candidate for governor. And Mr. Hilton, next question I want to ask you about kind of tails off that question about fire risk and fire danger. Fire insurance costs are increasing, especially in rural and foothill communities. What's your thoughts on that and things that could possibly be done?
Well, they're obviously connected issues because one of the reasons that the insurance rates are going up is because the wildfire risk has gone up because of their poor management of the forests. So that will help. If we start to see proper forest management and the risk come down, then that will be factored into the rates. And I'll make sure that the industry understands that, you know, and is closely following the good work that we'll be doing. There's some more structural changes that need to be made, some of which actually, to be fair, have been made by the current insurance commissioner, long overdue. The foundational problem here is that many insurance companies have left the market. They're not operating in California. That means that either people can't get insurance at all or only at extremely steep rates. I'm talking about the whole state now, because there's less competition. Less competition always means high prices, worse quality. That's what's going on here. And then you've got, of course, the scandal of the FAIR plan, the unfair plan, as many people rightly call it, which is much more expensive for much worse coverage as the backstop from the state. That the FAIR plan was only ever intended for about 100,000 people. Now you've got upwards of 600,000 on it. And it's a complete disaster in the making. So I laid out a plan a couple of weeks ago where we basically have three points in it. Number one, we have to get people off the FAIR plan. We have to proactively get people off that and onto something more acceptable. Secondly, we have to start dealing with the bureaucracy that has driven out so many of these insurance companies. That's the reason that they're leaving. They can't make money because everything's, you know, the risk itself that has gone up. And actually, and for a long time, they weren't allowed to price that into the rate setting. And that was one of the reasons they had to leave. Now that change has been made at the end of December 2024. And there's a nut by the current commissioner, so that's feeding its way through the system. The other big one was reinsurance costs, as they're known, which is the cost of the insurance companies to get their own insurance, in a simple way to explain it. That's also been made. That change has also been made. And so I think we can expect some things to get better just because of that. As I say, it should have been done years and years before, but they did finally get round to it. And then the other part that's driving up the cost is lawsuits. You've got a lot of lawsuits there. So I think we have to look at liability and for claims and payouts and make sure that we're not allowing malicious lawsuits, often funded by private equity from outside the state, to drive up costs for Californians.
You also mentioned...
And actually, one more point I would make, which is another reason that everything's so expensive in California in terms of insurance is because it costs so much more to rebuild anything, or to because building anything is three or four times as expensive in California as in a neighboring state because of all the labor and environmental regulations piled on building.
When it comes to building, would CEQA reform be a big initiative if you're elected governor?
Yes, but the particular aspect of it that I think that is not understood widely enough is that it's not so much reforming CEQA itself. It's reforming something that's gone along with CEQA, which is called the private right of action, which means that anybody can file a lawsuit under CEQA. Now, 70% of CEQA lawsuits are filed to block housing, and they're mostly filed by the unions in order to get project labor agreements, as I mentioned earlier, which are agreements which have either a provision for skilled and trained workers, which sounds very nice, actually means union workers only, or prevailing wage, which also sounds good, but actually means wages that are three or four times higher than the market rate. So all of those things drive up the cost And so it's not just CEQA, it's the private right of action under CEQA, and we need to get rid of that.
You mentioned also earlier being endorsed by President Donald Trump, and you plan to work with him. That'd be much different than the current governor, Gavin Newsom. Can you elaborate a little bit about like issues and things you'd like to work with the president on?
Well, definitely forest management, definitely where he's got a really good executive order, but also energy production. I mean, as part of the energy revolution in California, in America, we should be leading that. In California, we have abundant oil and gas reserves that are being kept in the ground because of the climate religion that isn't even helping the climate that the Democrats keep pushing. Great example is the Sable operation just off the coast of Santa Barbara, which is, some say it could be the second largest oil reserve in the country. And it's been completely blocked and held up by state government. The feds came in and overruled that, so that's now operating to a certain extent, but it could be much bigger. So you've got energy production, oil and gas production, and then you've got another example would be fighting fraud in our budgets. You've got the vice president's fraud task force and all these investigations going on into fraud and corruption in California. What does Gavin Newsom do about that? Post mean, vicious memes about Nick Shirley. I mean, it would be a completely different attitude when you have a governor and his team that wants to work with the president and his team.
You know, being a Republican and working with the legislature, statistically, the Senate and the Assembly would likely still remain Democratic. You know, what would be your strategy to try to get something done in a potential split government?
Well, I think, first of all, the fact of my election will really shake things up in Sacramento. It's going to be a political revolution, and I think it will start to make some things possible that aren't possible now. And I think there are some Democrats in there who are almost looking for cover to do sensible things, and I can help with that. Then you've got the ability to actually set the budget. That's the first thing that is the really kickoff of the whole legislative process. And the budget is the main policy-making document for the state of California. The governor writes the first draft. And so I'm confident that we can get some of the things through. I mean, I look at my tax plan, for example. Two components, the first 100 grand tax-free, up to 100,000, you pay no state income tax. That's particularly pro-worker, trying to help people who are earning 80, 90 grand a year, not a huge salary in many parts of California. In fact, 100 grand has been set in as the official poverty line in many counties now, which is unbelievable. But my plan is no state income tax on anything below 100 grand. Katie Porter, actually, one of my Democrat colleagues at a debate in Fresno the other week, said, I'm stealing that. That's a great policy. And so I think there are opportunities for consensus on certain things, and it will be my expectation that the Democrats work with me. After all, they had all these lectures for years about their commitment to our democracy and not overturning elections, so let's see them live up to that. But then, of course, you've got all the appointments. As governor, you have thousands of appointments to hundreds of state agencies and boards, and a lot of really good reform could come out of that too.
Need to take one more break. We're talking with Steve Hilton, Republican candidate for governor, on this weekend's Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherlode Views brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. In a programming note, next week on Motherlode Views, we're going to continue our focus on the California governor's race. We're going to hear from another candidate, Sheriff Chad Bianco. Our final segment with Steve Hilton is coming up in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
And we welcome you back to Motherlode Views. On this weekend show, we are talking to one of the Republican candidates for governor, Steve Hilton, talking about his campaign and issues and priorities. Any other issues that I haven't brought up yet that you're putting front and center in the campaign as you are running for governor?
Well, front and center in the campaign is one word for me. It's on the banners of all our town hall events. We're having many, many town halls up and down the state, hundreds of people coming out. And that word is CalAffordable. And that's really the focus, because that's the number one thing that People are talking to me about everything so expensive. So my plan is straightforward. I've mentioned some of it already, but here's the plan. In full, $3 gas, cut your electric bills in half, your first $100,000 tax-free, no more free health care for illegal immigrants, a home you can afford to buy, CalAffordable. That's the real point of what we're making, the real point of the argument we're making in the campaign. I mean, there's lots of detailed policy areas that you can get into, as we've been doing. But in the end, what matters is how does this translate to everyday life, and especially in that area that's right at the front of people's concerns right now, which is how expensive everything is. The underlying work is about reducing the bloated nanny state bureaucratic government and all its regulations and taxes that are driving up costs. But we've got to focus on the benefits to voters of changing direction after 16 years of one-party rule.
So getting gas closer to $3, how would you accomplish that?
Well, the starting point is to open up our own production. So it's insane to me that we have nearly, we have abundant oil and gas reserves in California, yet we're now importing nearly 80% of what we use. It used to be the other way around. That's insane. We're shipping oil halfway around the world on giant super tankers, spewing out carbon emissions in the name of climate. And that's one of a big reason why the costs are so high. And so by opening up California production, we can get costs down. We can also get costs down. I mean, I've called for suspending the gas tax. We'll see if the legislature works with me on that. But there's also many other things you can do through the regulatory environment, through CARB, the California Air Resources Board, your appointments there, holding them responsible for their dual mandate. Right now, they're actually statutorily obliged to follow a dual mandate, a little bit like the Fed. They're supposed to be concerned about inflation and unemployment. Well, the California Air Resources Board is supposed to take into account not just the state's climate goals, but also the impact on consumers, and they're not doing that at all. So I think there's lots of ways in which we can if you understand how the government works, there's a lot you can get done, and energy is going to be a big focus.
So just kind of big picture, too, if you're elected governor and looking out over 4 years, a little over 4 years from now after completing a first term, how do you think California will overall just be different?
It'll just be a place where we can breathe again in terms of living our lives without just completely being bossed around from morning till night by the government, telling us how to raise our kids, how to run our businesses, what car to drive, what kind of house to live in, how to cook our food. We're sick of it all. And it's just going to be, and I think there's a glory and greatness about California that's there and ready to spring up as long as we stop doing stupid things in the government. It's not complicated. It's just going to be a place where businesses can thrive and families can flourish, and without the heavy hand of government. It's actually a very classic common sense argument. Stop doing stupid things. Stop regulating everything to death. Stop increasing costs and taxes. Just let Californians live their lives.
One area that Governor Newsom's been criticized on is the handling of homelessness. What would be your plan to address homelessness in California?
Well, it's very straightforward. Again, it's just common sense. It's against the law to live and camp on the streets. These homeless campments are illegal. All of them are illegal. We've got to remove them. And as governor, I will. I'll use state law enforcement resources if local politicians can't or won't get it done, as they haven't been able to for nearly two decades now, and this scandal has just been metastasizing. So that's the first step. Then you have to get people into the treatment that they need. Around 80% of people living on the streets have either severe mental health problems or drug or alcohol addiction. You've got to get that dealt with. You've got to get people off the streets and into treatment and into mental health care.
Another issue surrounding the affordability issue that you talked about is housing. What would be your plan to address the housing crisis in the state?
Well, there's a number of things. First of all, we've got to simplify the building codes that make it three or four times as expensive to build the exact same floor plan of a building in California as it does in any neighboring state. Secondly, we have to stop the stupid taxes on housing. They're called impact fees. They're charged by state and local agencies and governments, and they can add up to 20% to the cost of a new home. Ridiculous. Where does that money go? Nowhere. Useful. Then we have to end the climate ideology that means that the only kind of housing that is considered okay, really, by the system is is dense apartment buildings shoved into suburban neighborhoods. That's outrageous. We've got to end the war on single-family homes and be able to expand our communities outwards, not just upwards.
Do you feel that the rural areas of California are sometimes being forgotten and left behind at the state capitol?
Always. Always. I mean, they just show contempt for the rural parts of California. Absolute contempt. It's worse than neglect. It's hostility. And that's going to completely change. I love our rural. I spent a lot of time in the Sierra foothills, both before I was running for governor as a family. We'd go up there the whole time. And we live in the Bay Area, and we'd often spend time, you know, at least a couple of times a year up in the Sierras. And we loved that. Spent a lot of time there. And I take that very seriously. I've now been to nearly every county, more than any other candidate has done by far. And I think it's an important indication of my commitment to make sure that rural communities, rural California, thrives and flourishes by having more control over what goes on. I mean, one of the main things that I've been pushing for and arguing for in my whole career, whether in business, in government, in politics, the books I've written and so on, is the decentralization of power. The idea that power should be held and exercised as close as possible to the people affected by it. And so I very much want to see rural areas, rural counties take back a lot of control over what happens there.
If elected governor and the high-speed rail project is put on your lap, what would you do with that project?
Well, as I said this week, now that we've heard, and yeah, I thought this before anyway, but now it's just adding insult to injury, their latest plan, if you can call it that. Remember, this was supposed to have already been open. You're supposed to have been able to travel, you know, already years ago from Los Angeles to San Francisco in 2.5 hours. That was the promise. We're not even on the agenda anymore. They're now talking about a train from San Francisco to Merced at the top of the Central Valley, which is going to be basically the existing normal train. Then a section of high-speed rail from Merced to Bakersfield. Then you get, unbelievably, then you get on a bus in Bakersfield, a bus to get to L.A. That alone will take 2.5 hours if you get bad traffic on the Grapevine. And so then you've got, so this insane joke of a plan, which was originally supposed to be $33 billion for something that was supposed to be open years ago, is now going to be open, if you're lucky, by the end of the 2030s. And listen to the latest number that they've put on it. $231 billion, seven times as much. It's just completely unacceptable. And so I won't accept it, and we're gonna kill it stone dead.
How about roads? Would you make any changes to how road improvements are carried out in the state?
Yes. I mean, look at here's another example of everything's going wrong. We have the highest gas tax in the country, highest vehicle registration, but the worst roads. 50th out of 50. We just ranked the worst roads. And one of the reasons is that, as with everything else, is also ridiculously mired in pointless bureaucracy and taxes. I was speaking to a contractor. She does, you know, there's a public works firm. They do a lot of roads, schools, those kinds of things, utility work. Anyway, they build roads. And they, she said, it costs four times as much to build the exact same stretch of road in California as it does in Texas. So, because of all the ridiculous regulations, environmental regulations, processes, soil reports, engineering, project labor agreements for unions, community workforce agreements. We have to hire local people and homeless. I mean, just endless nonsense and bureaucracy that massively inflate the cost. We get rid of that, we can get much better value for money.
Well, Steve Hilton, we've run out of time on this weekend's Motherload Views. Thanks so much for coming on, and we appreciate you joining us.
Of course, great to be with you. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Motherload Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherload. Motherload Views has been brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.